And I could see the power that media had to inform and shape our collective conversations. You know, like those water cooler moments where everybody's talking about the same thing. I thought, wow, what if I were able to get this message out to people about overcoming adversity? It's possible. You can overcome. What if I used major media for that? And so I set out to do that. I made that my job, to inform the world that we can overcome any challenge that befalls us.
It's one small step for man.
Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
We choose to go to the moon, not because they are easy, but because they are
hard. I have a dream.
You can't handle the truth.
7.
6.
5.
4.
3.
2.
1.
Super, 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 super.
Super you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Super You podcast. It's the podcast designed to unlock and unleash your inner superpower. I'm Jake with Equal Man Studios. Welcome to the show. Today, Equal Man sits down with best-selling author, speaker, and media personality, Cheryl Hunter. Cheryl shares her message worldwide on outlets including People Magazine, Dr. Phil, NBC News, Dr. Oz, CNN, Fox, PBS, and more. Cheryl didn't set out with a message to share, but while traveling abroad as a teenager, she was kidnapped and held captive by criminals who eventually left her for dead. Cheryl survived this life-changing event and used her experience to help people rise after adversity. Today, in addition to writing and producing for HBO, CBS, Paramount Pictures, and NBC, Cheryl helps established experts become world-renowned by leveraging the power of major media. We hope you enjoy today's episode of the Super You Podcast with Cheryl Hunter.
Welcome to the Super You Podcast, Cheryl Hunter. This is the show designed to unlock and unleash the superpower. In short, to have the courage to wear the cape, which you certainly have. You've got a very unique story that we're really happy to have you share with our audience today. And you've shared with the world, and you're helping people out around the world. So how's that for an intro? We're going to hand it off to you to go and talk about your childhood, but also then this huge event that occurred that you never would have anticipated, and it wasn't necessarily a good thing, and then how you've turned that into such a positive movement.
Thanks, Eric. I grew up in the remote Rockies of Colorado in what was really the flyover zone. And as a little kid, it was a horse ranch, and I thought, man, this is the best place in the world to live. But as I got older, I felt confined. I wanted to get out and see the world, meet people I wasn't related to by blood. I used to do some of my best thinking lying in the horse meadows, looking up at the sky, and I would see planes fly over and think, wow, I want to be the girl in the plane, looking at the girl lying down here on the meadow filled with horses and cows. And I want to be her, but I'd have to find some way that I could help people. I'd have to do something of value. And all I could think of at the time was I could teach people how to ride and train horses, but I knew that there was someone better at that than I was. I had a coach after all. So I thought, I'm going to have to figure this out. I have to find a way to devise a plan to get to the big city. One day I played hooky, went to the nearest convenience store, which was a few towns over. I hopped on my mini bike, rode there, and I got a Glamour magazine. Great career advice for a teenage girl, right? And they talked about how they always needed models. And I had no aspirations to be a model, but I thought, aha, that's something I can't do here that I can only do in a big city. I was on the boys' basketball team. I figured I was tall enough. So I talked my best friend into going where I thought they might need models, Europe, right? The center of fashion. And the big day came. We graduated high school, saved up all of our money from our part-time jobs, and we left for Europe. No sooner did I get to France than a man with a camera around his neck came up and said, hey, are you a model? I can make you one if you just go with me and my friend over there. Now I thought, well, this is how easy it is to become a model. Wow. And two, this is probably not the best idea, but hey, I can drive a tractor trailer and break and train horses. I'm a strong, smart, savvy kid. I'll figure it out. It turns out that however smart, strong, and savvy I thought I was no match for these criminals. They drugged me. You can fill in all the gory details with your mind. But eventually, after beating and torturing me mercilessly, they left me for dead, dumped me out in a park. And then the real battle for my life began. I was so confused because when I was captive, I thought, all I need to be is free. Then I'll be so happy. But once I was free, I thought, whoa, I never anticipated this. I'm now captive between my ears. I have to figure out a way to overcome this captivity or I can't go on. And so I started volunteering. I started volunteering at old age homes. And those people had survived so much. At first, I just wanted something to stop the conversations going on between my ears and sitting there and listening. If you've ever sat with old people, at least in our country, we don't pay a whole lot of attention to them. So they were thrilled to have the opportunity to speak. And there were war vets and Holocaust survivors and people who'd gone through bona fide trauma. And I just listened and they spoke. And then I said, I'm going to figure out why some of them overcame and others never did. And I listened and took notes and eventually codified what I'd learned and turned it into a framework that people could use to overcome adversity. And it was very effective. Not only did I use it on myself and overcome, but I started using it with other survivors, survivors of violent crime, sexual assault, trafficking, and it was working. Now, by this point, I'd gone on and my day job was writing. I wrote network TV. I wrote and sold original television shows. And I could see the power that media had to inform and shape our collective conversations. You know, like those water cooler moments where everybody's talking about the same thing? I thought, wow, what if I were able to get this message out to people about overcoming adversity? It's possible. You can overcome. What if I used major media for that? And so I set out to do that. I made that my job, to inform the world that we can overcome any challenge that befalls us.
Well, first of all, there's so much, and I was kind of speechless because the story is just incredible. And you're incredible just to kind of that point where they just drop you off and then you're like, have to collect yourself. Obviously on social media too, there's a lot of people, and Brene Brown's done a lot of research on this in terms of shame and blame. And you worked in the old people's home, which is great because you could hear their stories and go, how did they, and start to triangulate what are the patterns on how they overcame it? Because I'm sure, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm sure that at some point you almost blamed yourself a little bit. That happens to victims, is they'll blame themselves and they're blameless. I mean, it's just, so if you don't mind walking us through some of those, one, your own personal story on how you kind of were able to rise back to where you are, but also what were those common patterns you saw with all that firsthand research that you're getting from all these people that had lived through so many things?
Yes, that shame and guilt and self-condemnation is definitely part of the journey that I traversed. But what I learned in speaking to other survivors was that that's a commonality. I, as a teenager at the time, I thought, well, how am I going to stop this living hell that I was in after the kidnapping? And the best I could come up with at the time was, well, I'm going to pretend it didn't happen. I'm just going to shove it down. Not the best tactic, but it was all I could come up with at the time.
To protect yourself, build a wall. No, it makes sense.
Truly, I did ultimately become a model. Yep. And, I said, I went through all this in service of that dream. I'm going to do it. And it was the perfect career choice at the time for me, because nobody really cares about you and doesn't want to know you. You're just basically a meat suit mannequin. And it's like, if they could not ever hear you talk, it's ideal. Yeah. So I just stayed really far from people, kept my distance, read all the time. I had my face in a book and never really connected with people. But as I started volunteering at these elder care facilities, I could hear different things that they shared, like hiding their experiences and how isolating that had been for people. And while I wasn't yet ready to share my own experience, listening to theirs gave me a chance to recognize that I wasn't alone. And that was a very real first step. We say that phrase, you're not alone, when someone's suffering. And yet it feels like, you know, when it's 3 a.m. and I'm staring at the ceiling wide awake and in hell, I feel pretty alone. But to hear that these people had gone through such similarities made me really recognize that the phenomena with which I was faced weren't a personal rainstorm, as I'd heard it called. It was a human phenomenon, not my phenomenon. It wasn't because I had made a stupid decision. It was, hey, there's, you know, some bad people out there, and I fell victim to their tactics, and I made a choice that maybe wasn't the best, but I now can resolve to not make that choice again, etc. Each step of the sort of the rung of the ladder left me feeling more empowered, and I regained more of myself with each step that I took, which is why I'd so wanted so desperately to give it away at that point.
That makes all the sense in the world. And that's a tough place to traverse, but I'm so happy. The world's happy. You're able to kind of share your story to help others that think they're alone. I've got two daughters. One's a teenager and then the other one's about to become a teen. And a lot of our listeners, they send in notes. If it's someone, let's say that's just a teenage daughter and they're going through just trying to get self-esteem. They might've been bullied on social media or what have you. What's some of the unlocks that you give to those kids to where, like, hey, this is how you kind of get through that?
So much of our self-worth and self-esteem is based upon extrinsic or external factors, particularly at that age. The world revolves around them. It's just simply find one thing that you can hang your hat on, so to speak. One thing about yourself that you think you do well, even if it's, hey, I'm nice to people, or I listen to my parents, or I show respect to people in positions of authority, or I'm a good friend. I know how to listen. I'm polite. Even if it's something like that, find some internal intrinsic factor that can't be changed or shaped, can't be taken away. Yep. Just one thing upon which you can build will ultimately lead to a life where you can find many things about yourself to love.
I love that. That's good. I was writing it down because I think it's good. It's a good question to probably ask our kids, whether they're sons, whether they're daughters, is write down one thing that you think you're really good at. And it could be, as you mentioned, that you're nice to your parents or nice to people. Or it could be as simple as, I think I make the best Rice Krispie treats in town. You know, whatever it is, just to kind of hang the hat on that they have it. And then who knows? All of a sudden they go down, they become a world famous chef later on. You never know. Or it's just maybe it gets them through that moment. Maybe it gets them through those next couple of years. And then they adjust to whatever becomes what lights them up, becomes their superpower, becomes their strength. So I love that on this show that you gave us such a tangible thing that we can actually use as a question, such as like, where do you excel? What do you do? And it doesn't have to be grandiose. It could be very, very simple. So that's fantastic. Now you mentioned that you started to write shows and you write shows. Walk us through like what kind of shows were you writing, and obviously you're modeling, but what kind of shows were you writing and producing?
One of the ways, in addition to reading all the time, that I kept separate from people was I just sat and wrote. I had a journal and I would write observations, comical things that I would see throughout the day or insights that I would have. And I thought these things were quite funny. And I thought, I don't know if it's going to land for anybody else as particularly amusing or comical. So I eventually moved to New York and then later to Los Angeles. But I started renting theater space or doing stand-up comedy nights where I would try out some of this material, see if it landed for anybody else. And apparently it did. I got development deals from HBO and NBC and later from Fox, where they were developing my original writing. I wrote sometimes with a partner, sometimes on my own, but just created scripted TV, half hour and hour long, and eventually got lucky and sold some of them.
Wow. So,
and it was while I was doing that, that I started doing this methodology to help people overcome adversity and trauma and challenges. And that's when I started saying, wait. Media, yes, we get out entertainment and amusement and educational informational things, but what if it were really able to touch people and move and inspire them in such a way that their lives transformed and changed? So I thought, you know, I'm connected, sort of, you know, in a sort of junior way, being a new TV writer. What if I try to get messages out there to help people, you know, like I could comment on breaking news when there's a victim of a violent crime, share what they might be going through and how they might overcome and how each of us might do the same or support people in our lives to overcome challenge or adversity. I could start there. Do you know, Eric, it took me a decade to finally get a toehold in on major media and share my message, my work, my mission with the world. Now, by that point, I had done a lot of really big programs, every major network and affiliates all over the country and world. But at that point, it hit me. Once I had reached hundreds of millions of views, I thought, you know what? There's an industry dedicated to helping people overcome adversity. I'm going to step back now with respect and leave that work to the psychiatrists and psychotherapists and trained professionals in that regard. Mm-hmm. I'm instead going to do something different. My new mission is to help other mission-driven people who want to change the world with their work and their message, help them get out in front of millions using major media, because it took me a decade and I was already a network TV writer. Without my help, I thought those people aren't going to stand a snowball's chance in hell, as we used to say back on the ranch.
Yep.
they're never going to be able to do it. So I gathered together some of these gatekeepers, journalists, TV directors, producers, writers, and I said, am I crazy? Here's what I'm thinking about doing. What if we rally around these people with a mission to changing the world and serving people at the highest level? What if we rally around them and help them become renowned for their expertise? Tell me why that's a crazy idea. And I tell you to a person, Eric, each one of these gatekeepers that I gathered together said, this is why I got into media. I want to help people. I too want to change the world. Let's do it. And today I'm blessed to say that that's what we do.
That's so good. I'm going to double click on that. You brushed over something real quick that I think is fascinating. So you actually, instead of just going to the improv night, you actually rented out theaters in New York. And then did you have to sell tickets or how'd you get
in LA.
And how'd you get people to come? Like, how did it work? So you rented it. Was it just you or did you go, hey, let me get some of my friends that also do this and kind of have a, I don't want to put words to it. It was like an open mic night or like, so I just love the entrepreneurial spirit that you said, heck, I'm just going to go down there in LA and New York, rent out a space, and then go over my material. But walk me through like what that looked like.
Well, it was all kinds of stuff. I first just started going to when they would have like a comedy open mic and they had what they called a bringer night. You'd have to, like, I'd get some random slot like Sunday night at 11:30 p.m. Who's going to go to a comedy club at that hour? But in order to get a slot on the bill, you've got to bring 5-10 people And they've each got to buy two drinks or two items on the menu, whatever it is. And I mean, my dear friends, God love them, they would come. But that kind of wears thin on people. It's like, hey, I got a job. I can't really be going to an improv club at Sunday night at 11 p.m. anymore. But then, so then I started renting out theater space, and I would bring friends and family. I would give away tickets. I eventually got to a place where I could sell them.
Yeah.
But at first it was just, I was waiting tables during the day initially, walking dogs during the evening, driving food delivery, not kidding. Like every random job there was, buying space in the theater and paying to write, until finally something hit and I was able to get development deals and then sold things. But it was a haul.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, thank you for sharing that. Cause that's why I wanted to double click on it, because that's a commonality we have with the successful people like you on the show, is that it's not an overnight success. That, like, for example, we had the founder of Pictionary, the board game, and he's setting up shop at the bottom of an escalator at Nordstrom's and showing people how to play the game, right? He had convinced this one Nordstrom's to actually sell the game, but they weren't selling anything. So he's like, I gotta just sit at the bottom of this escalator, like he's spraying cologne on these people and saying, hey, what does this look like to you? Is it, you know, what is this? What am I drawing? And they're like, oh, I'll go get that game. So that's just really fascinating. So fast forward to today, as you mentioned, you're out there, you're trying to help people tell their story. A lot of our listeners out there, they have a story to tell and they're trying to do greater good, right? They want to help the world. So unpack specifically what you do, because there's a lot of components to do that. So some people, like, they excel in, I'm going to get you on these major media outlets. Others excel at, I'll get you up and running on social and I'll cut up a bunch of videos for you on social. And so you might do all of that, but like, what specifically is your wheelhouse to help this person? So Jill's out there listening. She's got a story to tell, but as you mentioned, she wants to kind of hyper accelerate that 10-year journey with help with someone like you that's already knows the ropes, knows the people. So walk us through specifically how you'd help a Jill.
Absolutely. Back to when I was originally writing comedy and plays, I hired publicists a few times. And again, I didn't have a lot of bank. I was waiting tables and walking dogs and doing food delivery. But I put all my money into publicists in hopes that they would help me hit the big time. None of it worked. A couple of times they brought people to my shows, but that was the extent of it.
Yep.
But
a lot of us out there, we get 20 emails a day from these publicists. So yeah, keep going. Thank you.
I knew that publicists existed. I just didn't have any experience of them being successful for me. They never quite got my brand, my message, my intentions. But so when I set out to create a different kind of PR and publicity firm, I brought in actual network gatekeepers, directors and producers who've been producing and directing network TV for 30 years. That's the kind of people in our team. And it's filled with booking producers who book people for national TV and magazines and newspapers and radio right now. That's who our team is. Mm-hmm. And we don't do social media. Our clients find, for them, social media is more of a vanity metric. That's what we hear from clients all day long. And thousands of people reach out to us a month to talk about their business. But there's a woman who came to us last week who had 350,000 followers. She creates a lip pencil that is inexpensive, under $10, sells at CVS and drugstores throughout the country. She got 350,000 followers and she said, I can't get anyone to opt into my email list. I can't get anyone to buy my lip pencil. It's less than $10. I can't get them to do anything but like pictures of big lips. Help. No. And so it's like, there's people like that. There's a fellow by the name of Dr. Michael Hutchinson. He's a dentist who invented a mouth guard that helps stop concussion.
Okay.
He came to us. This is a perfect example. He had a son who was 8 years old and wanted to start playing contact sports, football. And he said, oh man, I know the statistics on concussion. 10,000 something people a day suffer life-altering concussion. I don't want my kid to be one of them. So he studied, did all kinds of research, built a mouthpiece, got a prototype made. It goes on the bottom jaw. and holds the jaw in something called physiologic jaw position that prevents concussion like 90-something percent of the time. I've learned this in working with him. But he came to us. He'd put his son all the way through school. Neither his son nor any of his teammates had ever gotten a concussion because they were all using his mouthpiece. Now, cut to, he'd gotten it patented. He's got it manufactured, and he's going out to pitch it. And he came to us saying, I'm laughed out of all these pitch meetings. Mm-hmm. People say, hey, guy, have you never seen the NFL or a boxing match? They say the mouth guard goes on the top jaw. Don't you know anything? And he said, I have to educate them as to why the NFL has such staggering concussion rates.
Yeah.
Why the top jaw mouthpieces don't work, but I'm laughed out of every room I go to. Please help me figure this out. We ended up getting him the right messaging. And that's one of the things we do with writer producers on our team is craft the right kind of messaging. Now, this is a dentist. He should know how to write. Yeah. But the messaging for media is a very different thing. Mm-hmm. So we worked on his messaging. We got him media trained. So he's prepared to do any interview at any time and answer all the tough questions where they like to throw the new guests on the sword.
Yeah.
And watch them flail around because in media, they say conflict is king. The new guy is usually the one who creates the conflict. We train him up so that he would never be the one who goes down that way, so that he looks like a superstar right out of the gate. And then we help him secure all the right media for him.
Okay, so you have the connections in the media outlets for that each person that you're working with.
And it's the right media. Like some people come in and they're like, I want to be on Anderson Cooper. And we're like, you help single divorced moms and that's who have kids under the age of three. That's not where they're what they're consuming.
Yeah.
But so we help Dr. Hutchison get on the news in all the ways that matter. Mostly hyper-localized local news state affiliates for the networks all around the country. Do you know right now he's got that mouth guard on massive, huge celebrity athletes and is in process of securing 125,000 of these mouth guards for our U.S. military servicemen and women.
Nice.
And that is like what? From laughed out of a room to major media edification that makes him now listened to rather than being laughed out.
Oh, I love that. I love that you're helping people help the world. That's so fast. I mean, what a journey and what an inspiration you are to so many out there. And I wish I knew about the mouth guard back in college. I actually had a mouth guard in basketball, but I got four of my teeth on the bottom knocked out. So it's good that they have that now. So it's good. But that's a whole other story that we don't have time for today. But how can people find out more about you, Cheryl? Like, how do they learn more about you, about your company? I know a lot of our listeners really want to know.
Absolutely. My website is CherylHunter.com and it's CHERYLHunter.com. And I'm happy to have a call to explore if we can help with anyone who is your listener.
And I know you can help because you're helping people help the world. So what a great, great gift you're giving back. And thanks for telling your story. I know it's going to inspire a lot of our listeners. It inspired me just to hear it. And then the journey that you're on and now what a place you're in to help so many people that then can broadcast out and help, whether it's from concussions. That's a huge problem that's being solved. So that's great. That the good doctor is able to do that and with your help. So thank you so much. And thank you for joining the Superhuman Podcast.
Thank you.
So thanks again for listening to today's Super You Podcast. Again, it's a podcast designed to unlock and unleash your inner superpower. And if you want to pay it forward, make sure you go post a review for the Super You Podcast, because what that will do, it'll allow others that aren't familiar with our podcast to discover it. And hopefully that allows them to unlock and unleash their inner superpower. So that's it for today's show. I'm your host, Equal Man, reminding all of us, it's not what we take from the world, it is what we leave behind.
Seven.
Six.
Five.
Four.
Three.
Two.
One.
Super, 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 super.
Super you.